Manafort and Cohen guilty. Social conservatives talk about a challenge to Holcomb. That plus dueling ethics complaints and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 24th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, President Donald Trump's former campaign chair was found guilty in federal court while his former attorney pleaded guilty and implicated the president. Paul Manafort was found guilty of 8 counts of tax and bank fraud. The federal jury was deadlocked on another 10 counts. Manafort was Donald Trump's campaign chair for 2 months in the middle of 2016. That same day, Trump's longtime former lawyer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to 8 counts in federal court. Those counts included tax evasion and unlawful campaign contributions. Cohen, in his plea deal, said he paid 2 women to keep quiet about alleged affairs at the direction of President Trump. Trump, in a television interview this week, said the payments were made with his money, not campaign funds. What impact will this have on November's election? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette Statehouse reporter Nikki Kelly. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Indiana Republicans, by and large, have wholly backed Donald Trump, as a lot of Hoosiers did, obviously. Should those Republicans be concerned going into November?
Oh, I think so. I mean, Mike Braun, for example, ran in the primary saying that he was more Trump-like than his other two opponents. And he is. I mean, he runs his business a lot like Donald Trump does, and he certainly is plays fast and loose with the truth the same way that Donald Trump does. I don't think the story's over yet. I think that there's a lot more that's going to unfold on this, that by the time November comes around, they're going to wish that there was a that wall that Trump talks about was between them and Trump. Because whether he's guilty of a crime or not, holding this man up to the United States and to all the children in the United States as a role model, if he ever had a moral compass, it doesn't work anymore. And the idea that this person should be president of the United States, I think, is appalling now to more and more people, including more and more Hoosiers.
We talked about what might end up mattering the most in the Senate race, and there's some who think it might be a little bit of a referendum on Donald Trump. Is that bad news for Mike Braun at this point?
Could be bad news for Joe Donnelly, too. I mean, if that's the premise, because he's running ads saying he's with Trump, whatever percent of the time, 60-something percent of the time. The ad running right now says he fully supports Donald Trump's immigration plan, including the wall. By name, I mean, he talks about the wall in the ad. So, I mean, Joe Donnelly knows what Mike Braun knew in the primary, and that is that Donald Trump remains popular in Indiana, and that people continue to support him in Indiana. There's a couple different factors here. I mean, I think the people, I don't think any of the actions of this week caused a Donald Trump supporter to go, all right, enough, because so much has happened, however they've explained this back to themselves on the issues they care about to continue to support the president, they're locked in. And so the biggest thing, I think, going forward continues to be the Supreme Court nominee. And what is Donnelly's decision there? And how big of a presence is that in voters' minds?
We'll be talking about that a little later in the show. Donald Trump's numbers still are fairly strong in Indiana. Obviously not 19 points like he won in the election, but they're still strong. So is there anything between now and 2.5 months from now that'll unshake that?
Oh, well, you know how much can happen in an Indiana week. If Washington days, you know, you can compress a lot into an hour.
It's exhausting. I don't remember the conversion rate.
You know? it's worse than metrics to old English, but I flunked that chapter in math. I think Mike is right. People aren't going to, who have been dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporters, aren't going to throw up their hands and say that's enough. But I think what we've seen this week in the court with the two cases that you mentioned might cause some people to at least scratch their chins or start to think, maybe there is more to this than this simply being a witch hunt. Even though we had seen guilty pleas coming out of the Mueller investigation prior to this, I don't think they resonated, perhaps because they didn't get the coverage and they didn't have the profile that these individuals have.
Or the proximity for that matter.
Or the proximity. So I think now for the first time this week, now that there is meat on the bone, so to speak, in terms of this investigation actually producing results, where you have a jury in one case of the defendant's peers, and then a guilty plea in another, I think people are starting to take it more seriously.
Do you think it filters down to the Senate and other races here?
It might a little. I mean, it's certainly not going to filter to the core base, but it's that voter in the middle who maybe came out because they were frustrated 2 years ago. And it almost hurts as much if they just don't come out. It's
right.
Not whether they'll vote for or against someone. If they just stay home, you know, that's enough. And I think the Cohen case specifically is one that's getting people's attention because it's not hard to explain. It doesn't have to do with foreign interests and tax code. It's just simple. Did someone pay off a woman to shut up, you know, and was campaign money used? And I think that's a little easier for them to get.
I don't think it matters whether campaign money was used. The campaign finance violation is that Cohen paid money to benefit the campaign in excess of the amounts allowed for federal government. Whether it came, it doesn't have to come. I know President Trump is saying it didn't come out of the campaign coffers. That doesn't matter for the violation at all. Okay?
You're saying it's an in-kind contribution.
It is an in-kind contribution in excess and not reported initially, then reimbursed corporately, which is another problem from a federal campaign.
Yeah, but
so
see,
you've
now
got other violations.
Now you're getting
into
things that sound complicated.
Boy, that sounds complicated.
You've got the sixth person in this administration. You've got a culture of corruption here that is the worst we've seen since the Teapot Dome scandal.
The legalities aside, Nikki's right. It's the court of public opinion here. The fact that he said he didn't know about it, and then the payments were made, whether it's out of the campaign coffers or whether it's out of his own pocket, to a lot of voters, it's probably immaterial. It's the lying that supersedes that.
Well, the leader of an Indiana social conservative group says she's unhappy with Governor Eric Holcomb and is exploring ways to oust him in 2020. Monica Boyer is the co-founder of the Indiana Liberty Coalition. In a Facebook post this week, Boyer said she wants to talk to Congressman Todd Rokita about running for governor. That's because she's unhappy with Eric Holcomb, whom she calls our, quote, current tax-raising liberal governor. That's after the leader of an Indiana religious conservative group earlier this month scolded Holcomb for his support for a hate crimes bill, warning the governor, quote, he's not as popular as some of his media clips tell him. Mike O'Brien, how serious could such a challenge be to Eric Holcomb?
Look, I think you want to take all these seriously, and these people are within the Republican Party. You want to be responsive to that. But look, I mean, they're upset about the gas tax. They ran 11 people in primaries against state legislators who supported it. All 11 incumbents won. And it wasn't close. So their batting record's not, their batting average isn't great on this when they mouth off and try to take on Republicans in the primary. But, you know, and the governor's, Governor Holcomb and our state party operation, they are rock solid and they haven't been strong. We've had strong state parties in the past. We've never had a state party this strong. We're at a staff level, it's humming. We're going to close out the year with record dollars in the bank. The governor's going to, Governor Holcomb's going to have more money in the bank than any first-term governor in history, we expect. So he is in an incredibly strong position to pivot out of November into re-election. We're doing our own numbers, too, so I don't know what the news clips are saying, but the polling is saying he's the most popular elected official in the state of Indiana.
And it's not
close.
He was the largest
voter. He's the least known, but he's not the most popular.
Yeah, that might be an issue.
Yeah.
Eric Holcomb hasn't run in a statewide primary. He avoided it by the nature of how he got into that nomination. So should he be concerned?
I think he should be concerned, particularly if they unite behind a candidate, whether it's Rokita or Curtis Hill or somebody else who helped repudiate his attempt in the Republican convention to change the definition of marriage to make it more suitable for the LGBT community. He's been repudiated there. The question is, too, if you know, he's now supporting hate crimes legislation, can he get it through the legislature? I mean, if he can't do that, then it seems to me it shows that he is vulnerable, and particularly in a Republican primary against a hardcore right-wing trumpet like either Curtis Hill or Todd Rokita, I think he could have problems.
She brings up, how much will the hate crimes fight tell us about how much weight Eric Holcomb has behind him right now?
Oh, it'll be interesting to see, because there are some key Republicans who have long fought against that bill. I mean, obviously, I don't think Holcomb, I mean, anyone could, not anyone, but a solid candidate could give him a run. The fact is he is relatively not well known among parts of Indiana. He hasn't been around that long. He had that very quick campaign. And obviously his margin was... Yes, and obviously his margin was helped by Trump 2 years ago. So, you know, I think he'll do what he needs to do to shore up his base.
Would this just be Eric Miller versus Mitch Daniels all over again?
Well, there's no...
I know Mitch Daniels. Mitch Daniels is a friend of
mine. I know both of them. But
Eric Holcomb is no Mitch Daniels.
I think Mitch Daniels
There's no doubt that if, in fact, there was some rebel candidate that was able to garner the kind of unanimous support, or at least among the right elements of the party, that it could upset, give, it would be an interesting race. But I think the Republican Party in Indiana would do so at its own peril, because in the general election, that would probably not be the best move. And I say that not because of looking forward, but let's look at history. I mean, I've covered a lot of Indiana governors, and the first, you know, I kind of remember as a kid was Otis Bowen. If you come all the way up through that, Indiana has always voted for and kept in office individuals who tend to be middle of the roaders. They tend to be, we deliver good, honest government. We're not firebrands. We're not serving up a lot of red meat. Who's the only Indiana governor within, say, that time span that appeared to run a risk of not being reelected?
Vice President.
Mike Pence. And
the Vice President
here.
It really
because
didn't work
he probably ignored, you know, the notion, let's... Remember the moratorium that Mitch Daniels talked about on social issues. Let's focus on the economy. He didn't necessarily do that. And we remember RFRA and the debate over the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And Hoosiers, again, I'm just using history as a guide. Well, don't see
one
like
example
that.
That's been talked about this week is Lugar and Murdoch. The difference there is, if in that comparison, Holcomb's Lugar. But Lugar was a global U.S. senator, and what cost him was his complete disconnection from county party organizations, and that gave Richard Mack a really good wide opening.
It was also
the
his
county,
age,
the,
too.
Yeah, sure, there were a couple factors
and
there. But
how many years he'd served.
But if you're in leadership in a county party organization right now, there's a pretty good chance you're there because of Eric Holcomb. And so if this group wants to go toe-to-toe in county organizations, they better pack a lunch, because Eric built these organizations. He built it for Mitch Daniels. He built it for Dan Coats.
I just hope we save the clip of Ann saying that Mitch Daniels is a friend of hers. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: should Governor Eric Holcomb be worried about a primary challenge in 2020? A yes or B, no. Last week's question: should the state withhold voucher funds from schools that discriminate against the LGBT community? 75% say yes, 14% say no, and 11% say parents already have that option. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana Republicans this week filed an ethics complaint against Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly, while just days later, Democrats filed a complaint against Donnelly's Republican challenger, Mike Braun. The Republican complaint objects to video footage Donnelly's office released of his meeting with Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. The GOP says the video has, quote, no conceivable official purpose, and it alleges the senator's office posted it for use by campaign organizations. But neither the Donnelly campaign nor any outside group has used the footage, which the Republican Party acknowledges. The Democratic Party's complaint alleges Mike Braun didn't properly file information about a loan he made to his campaign. The Braun campaign disputes this. It sent a copy of the required campaign finance form to Indiana Public Broadcasting, which shows the reported loan, time-stamped within a required 48-hour deadline. The Federal Election Commission's website doesn't reflect that, but likely due to a technological error. One report on the site is incomplete. Basically, it looks like a garbled fax. And the parts of the form that are readable appear to match up with the form the Braun campaign shared with Indiana Public Broadcasting. John Schwanis, does this all come off like a kind of petty back and forth between the two campaigns?
Maybe in hindsight, now that we saw the documentation that indicated that loan was disclosed. But at least I understand that complaint. Frankly, I don't understand the GOP complaint, because if the argument is that at some point Donnelly will try to use his meeting with the nominee for political gain, Why would he have not had news media in the event to, I mean, you would think that he would deliver, you know, ice cream cones and popcorn. Please come and video.
The argument was someone else.
Please come and do this. But
well,
so that's,
right.
I don't get that. And then if in fact getting images and chronicling something is a no-no, well, then somebody should tell the White House, because back to the John F. Kennedy administration, we've had highly paid White House photographers, with some exception. There were some lapses there during the Carter administration, who chronicle all sorts of things that other news organizations aren't privy to. And as far as I know, some of those even do show up in campaign ads once in a while.
And you pointed out this week that a Republican senator did pretty much the exact same thing the Donnelly office did.
Yeah, he did the exact same thing. Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, he took video of, you know, the arrival, the niceties, that you couldn't hear what they were saying, but he even had basically a voiceover talking about how great Kavanaugh was. So, I mean, I don't really get that complaint in the sense of, you know, they complained for weeks about him not meeting them, and then they're mad that he met them and actually showed video of him doing his job. So I don't know that that's going anywhere. And the second complaint, obviously, we've seen kind of figured out.
It can be,
I think,
pretty easily
overall,
explained.
It just looks like this sort of back and forth gotcha that voters just tune that stuff out.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, if you don't understand the Republican one, why have the Democrats follow up?
Because they could. I mean,
is that a good thing?
He started it. Well,
to be fair
about this, you could not read what it is that Mike Braun's campaign supposedly filed with the FEC.
That's true.
And that's a legitimate complaint. If that's the purpose of filing it is disclosure, and if you can't read it, you violated the purpose. And that was the complaint. So I think Nikki's right. I don't think it's a big deal either way, but it does show the fact that Mike Braun came out attacking Joe Donnelly for the same thing a Republican senator did. A, they didn't do their homework first, and B, they must be more than a little worried about Senator Donnelly.
Is that what that says?
You know.
Next question, please.
On one shoulder, why do voters care about it? We talked about this a few weeks ago with the loan issue. The federal election campaign laws are so convoluted and complex. Everybody, I mean, they're all violating them because you almost have no choice but to, you know, in the way, or at least give the appearance that you're doing something wrong when you're not. You're doing something that's perfectly legal, like the loan. But I think you said when we talked about that it just doesn't look right. But that's the system we're in, so I don't know. I don't think voters care about this stuff at all.
That was a very good non-answer, really. That was very, very well
getting
done.
Good at it.
A new poll that's raised some eyebrows this week shows Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly with a rather sizable lead over Republican Mike Braun. The poll comes from the Trafalgar Group, a firm based in Georgia that surveys federal races and typically works with Republicans. They show Donnelly with a roughly 12-point lead over Mike Braun, a major outlier in all the polling the race has seen. The poll also asked Hoosiers who they'd vote for depending on whether Donnelly votes for or against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. And Donnelly's numbers are better if he votes no than if he votes yes. Nikki Kelly, this poll diverges pretty widely from what we've seen in the race, so should we just kind of dismiss it?
I don't dismiss any poll, because honestly, between the couple ones that I've seen, I haven't seen all the cross tabs on all of them. I know that two other ones that were discussed by 538, who put up that thing, said, you know, the other polls weren't by top rated pollsters either. But I think the interesting part about it isn't the margin, but is seeing how it changes when he votes for or against Kavanaugh, because I think the traditional wisdom is that if he doesn't vote to confirm Kavanaugh, then he can't win Indiana. And I do think that at least shows an interesting argument that some Democrats are really going to hold him to the fire on that.
Or independents, too.
Yeah, I mean, were you surprised to see those numbers about the Kavanaugh vote?
Sure, based on conventional wisdom and what the talking points have been. Yeah, I guess that did surprise me. But both of these, the poll we talked about, you know, a few weeks back or months back, and this one, they are interesting, no doubt interesting. But because of how unsettled the electorate is, as we saw in the last presidential cycle, by that I mean people coming off the bench, so to speak, to vote for the first time ever or in decades in some cases because of Donald Trump or whatever brought them out, dissatisfaction with Hillary. even though this poll, the sample was specifically, they selected individuals who were likely voters, and that was the definition. It's a cliche to say, but it's so true. You don't know who's going to turn out. Will be people, you know, they're not saying, back to the very first question, that's it, I'm not done. But if, as Nikki suggested, some Trump voters say, it's enough for me to sit this one out, then the turnout shifts, then who's to say? So, I mean, that's what
is... That was an interesting part of that poll, because it kind of showed you the Democrat base can drop out, but there is Republican crossover. Like, if he didn't support Trump, then he dropped by a different number. But you could extrapolate from that number might be Republicans who are crossover support him. So,
and is that bad news for Mike Braun?
I think it was always an assumption. I mean, Donnelly was always going to have Republicans crossover and support him. I mean, he just that's just how he's handled himself. I think that's baked into whatever, you know, the plan might be. The first reaction I had with this poll was, who in Trafalgar is doing a poll? There's like one stoplight in that town, but I will just remind you that about 10 days before the gubernatorial election, Monmouth came in and did a poll and showed Eric losing by 18, and he won by 6. So unless you believe there's a 26-point swing in the last 10 days,
actually I do. As a matter of fact,
you think there's a 26-point swing in the governor's race?
I think so.
I don't think it was 26, but I think there was a swing.
There was a huge swing in the last 10
These Kavanaugh numbers, do they go to kind of why you've been banging the drum on?
Well,
he can't vote for Kavanaugh.
You know, I mean, you've got Kavanaugh having a total flip-flop. Presidents can be deposed, indicted, tried, to saying they can't even be deposed now.
Democrat presidents can be deposed.
Yeah, well, and frankly, the memo that he put out about the questions for Bill Clinton showed the level of animosity he had towards him. And I really think that shows the kind of demeanor that shouldn't be on any bench, much less the Supreme Court. So the number doesn't surprise me at all. I don't think he's suited to be a justice of the Supreme Court, and I don't think that a president that is this close to having a debate as to whether or not he should be indicted while seated as president should be appointing a person who's the ultimate judge of whether or not he's guilty.
Mike, I want to ask you this. We've seen national polling on Kavanaugh shift pretty dramatically in the last few weeks, versus where it was yes confirmed and more than no, and now it's about even. Do you think that's changing Joe Donnelly's mind at all?
No, because I think in Indiana, where Trump is, Hoosiers generally still want Donnelly to go and support the president's nominee.
I don't think Trump is as popular here as you seem to think he is.
New ads from the Indiana Secretary of State's office this week seek to reassure Hoosiers about election security.
The campaign uses television, radio, and print ads to urge people to register to vote by the state's October 9th deadline. The ads call Indiana voter registration, quote, safe, secure, and reliable, and they emphasize the power of the vote, what the ad calls the great equalizer.
The plumber and the stockbroker don't cross paths very often. The socialite and the tattoo artist don't go to the same restaurants. But for 12 hours all across Indiana, the luxury sedan and the pickup truck sit beside each other in a VFW parking lot.
Annalini, is this kind of a classist way to present what would be a positive message of the equalizing power of the vote?
You know, obviously the vote is the great equalizer. It's nice that Connie Lawson could spend the time to do this. I would have been a little bit more encouraged about her concern for voter security if she'd done something about it in the last 2 years. The fact that 60% of our counties don't have a mechanism for a recount, when you have foreign governments trying to intervene in our elections, is shocking. And she's doing nothing about it.
Yeah, with the spotlight on election security, do you think Connie Lawson's done enough?
I don't think the federal government's done enough. And I think the states have been waiting for some guidance here and money to do it, if we're going to go and secure these elections. But there's also been no evidence that these machines have been hacked or compromised or anything like that.
And that's just the irony, given what we saw in D.C. this week. We had the Election Securities Act coming out of James Lankford, Oklahoma Republican, bipartisan bill, which would have done a lot of things, given security clearance to Connie Lawson and others around the country.
Which is something they've asked for.
So they could have been privy to this. There would have been an auditable paper trail. But guess who apparently derailed it, according to a lot of sources? The White House. Thought it was federalism.
The governor's residence had an unusual guest recently, a goat named Buck Wild. Buck is a 4-H goat that belongs to the Holcomb's niece, K.N. Amos. The goat doesn't stay in its pen, and so it was kept in the garage of the residence when Amos was in Indy to show Buck at the state fair. Mike O'Brien, Karen Pence had her beehives. Should the Holcomb's turn the residence into a goat sanctuary?
I actually saw that goat. I was at the governor's residence that day, and I walked by one of the windows, and Henry Holcomb was barking at it, and it was standing on a table, terrified. It was hilarious. But the Holcombs already made one contribution to the residence, and that's a full-size basketball court.
That's
the Special Olympics basketball team went
to
play there last week.
This past weekend, you were there for that opening, and
I was.
You also know some details about that goat at the state fair.
I do know that Janet Holcomb unexpectedly participated in a goat obstacle course and won.
That's right. She beat the fair queen.
She
is
did
that
beat
what
the fair queen.
Right.
Is that
wow.
a goat rodeo?
Well, something like that. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.